Hello, dear internet strangers. Today is April 15th, and I am Kevin Carlson, joined by my co-host...
Steve Kubitz.
And we are Talking in Obscurity, a companion podcast to Writing in Obscurity. Today, we are talking about A Heart That Works by Rob Delaney.
Yeah, so normally on this podcast, this is my pick, and we always pick very just sad... in our friend group, we call it Carlson Twist Books.
Why is it always my last name? You're just sad.
Yeah, just sad... books, sad things, hard to get through, and I thought, what can I pick that'll change that theme? How about a story about a comedian and a writer whose 2-year-old son tragically dies of cancer at the age of 2.
Spoilers
there. This is a devastatingly sad but beautifully funny book, and it's my pick, and I love it. I'm excited to talk about it. I've been looking forward to this for weeks now, so I'm really excited to get into it, and it's
you wouldn't think that, like, a story about how this guy's son dies of cancer would have funny moments. It's mostly sad. It's heartbreaking. But there are huge laughs.
What's that expression that comedy is just tragedy plus time?
Yeah.
And I think this book, it's not even time. Because I don't think there's ever a situation where you talk about your 2-year-old son passing away that feels funny.
Yeah.
But it does manage to make you laugh a lot.
No, well, to be clear, you never laugh about the fact that his son died. It's things that just happened in his life. Before, after.
Yeah, even during. Yeah, because absolutely.
Even during. But what it is, an unflinching look at how just awful this situation is how... He says it best, like, towards the end of the story that he's telling. His little boy got sick. It got worse. They went to see the doctor. It was real bad. And then he died. And that was it.
I think there's, like, a bit... Yeah, that's so true. There's a bit... Like, he talks about that a lot, where it's, like, people try to find... how can we make this sort of... People try to center it about themselves. That's what he talks about a lot. Like, people try to, you know... Because people do that. It's unavoidable, and... There's no way to relate unless you've had a child die young. There's no way to know what Rob Delaney and his wife, I can't remember his...
Leah
went through. There's no possible way you're going to know what they went through. Because how could you? Unless you went through it yourself. Because, you know, I don't have children. I'm married. I don't have kids. I have a dog and a cat. But to be honest with you, like, as much as I love those animals, when they do inevitably go... It won't be as devastatingly sad as losing a 2-year-old child. It just won't be.
Especially to the circumstances it was.
Yeah.
So, how do we want to get into our likes? Our loves.
I know.
If you will.
This is like such a hard. This book was actually. It's funny. My pick. And I absolutely love this book. But it was in. Trying to like break it down and actually analyze likes, dislikes was the single most difficult thing I've done on this podcast.
Like. I think we talked about this before we started recording. Is like most of my loves and dislikes are the same.
They're the same thing. That's the same thing. Like it's funny because my main like of this book is that there are some genuinely laugh out loud moments in it, things that made me crack up. But then, to not to get too ahead of it, bounce it out. I then felt guilty for laughing because of just what the topic of the book is, but. That's my main like. My first like. I loved how funny this book was. It was so warm and funny and just clever. And there are times where you'd be like reading it, or in this case, well, I'll be lying, listening to it. Then I felt like, oh my god, this dude is so talented.
Yeah.
That like he's so clever and he's so witty. That oh he's so hilarious. And then you would feel, oh my god, how is he making this funny? It should not be funny, but it is.
Well, you know what Rob Delaney is that he is a teddy bear. Stuffed with nothing but razor blades. And like, but still looks like the fluffiest, cuddliest teddy bear, as cute as can be, nothing but razor blades. But you feel compelled to hug anyways.
Yeah, you want to take a risk and try it.
That's what this story is. That's what this book is. It's a razor blade of a thing. Because one of my chief loves of it is that like, it was so compelling that I read the entire book, of course on Audible, audiobook all the way, in two marathon sessions. Like, I read half of it one night, and I cried like 5 or 6 times. And I thought, okay, I think I got that out of my system. The next half, the half the sun dies in, well, that has to, it can't be as bad as the beginning. And I'm way worse. I was never more wrong in my life. I cried like 15 to 20 times that time. And the day that I was like finishing up, the last hour and a half, I was like, I gotta get out of my apartment. I gotta walk around. I need to like be outside where there's people and not be alone in this dark room. And I'm walking around listening to this, and that was a fucking mistake. I will admit that right now, because I'm just randomly weeping in public. And I was like, you gotta get out of this, Kevin. You need to go home.
See, it's interesting because, you know, for me, like, it's the exact same vein where he manages to, like, really attack your emotions. Like, that is sort of the main, like, takeaway of this book. If you read it or listen, I don't care how you read it, listen, whatever you do, Rob Delaney will absolutely shatter and he will attack and beat your emotions down because you will ugly cry.
Yeah.
Several times, you know. I, you know, not to get morbid, you know, but within the last year of this, my mom passed away. And I cried at her funeral. I was very sad. Mm-hmm. But to be honest with you, this book probably made me ugly cry worse than that. Because, you know, it's weird when it's, I feel like humans, if you're a person that's got like healthy empathy, in a lot of ways, you find ways to tie into, okay, how would this make me feel? And it's funny, this book answers that question without giving too much away. My mom passing away, as sad as it was, that's the order of things. My mom was always inevitably going to die in my lifetime, if things went right.
Yeah.
You know, and this book addresses that. Because, you know, this is not a fiction book, so I feel like we can get a little ahead. He talks about when his dad got cancer.
Yeah, I mean, like you said, this is nonfiction, so we're not doing a spoilers, non-spoilers.
Yeah, and when that happens, he says, I was upset and worried for my dad, but who gives a fuck? He's my dad. If he dies, that's what's supposed to happen.
Yeah.
Because it happens after his son already passed away.
Yeah.
You know, and this book made me cry in such a way. I don't have children, like I said before, but I just thought, if I had a child, if me and my wife had a baby, and within a year or two of that baby being born, it died, I don't think I could handle it. I truly don't think I could. And this book really
puts you in what his shoes were like.
Like, it attacks you and it wins because it makes you feel, unless you are a fucking sociopath that feels nothing, you're going to be devastated emotionally from this book.
Yeah, I feel like because this is not such a non-traditional sort of book that we're reviewing here, I'm going to skip around to one of my dislikes.
Oh.
We're going full madness here.
Yeah.
Took a long break. We're going to mix up likes and dislikes together.
Anarchy. Chaos.
Just like this story. Yeah, it made me ugly cry in a Qdoba. Like, I'm sitting there eating a burrito, which I love. I love burritos, probably my favorite food on earth. And I'm there in a crowded Qdoba listening to this book. I'm like, got to finish this for the podcast. Little did I know that we would be scheduling problems, and I would have another entire month. But yeah, I was like, I'm going to get this done. I'm going to eat this burrito, listening to the kind of morphine he's pumping into his dying child. And tears actually are a good seasoning. Gives you that extra kick of saltiness to your burrito.
Helps the burrito. I probably makes the burrito bowl taste a little better if you have one of those. Yeah, it's funny because, you know, that sort of, for me, was a thing I actually liked about it, was that it made me so upset. Mm-hmm. You know, this book is such a perfect, where likes and dislikes kind of cross over, because I loved how emotional it made me. Because, you know, I got the thing to read this book months and months ago, because Rob Delaney was on CBS This Morning, because I'm 97 years old. I watch CBS This Morning every single day.
Yeah.
Shout out to Gail, Oprah's friend. She's awesome.
But was FDR nice and real person?
Yeah. And he was on CBS This Morning talking about this book when it initially came out, probably 4 or 5 months ago. And seeing him like just be so funny and witty and charming while talking about literally the worst thing you could possibly imagine to people that everyone on that news show has kids. Mm. You know, and seeing him talk about my son Henry, he got sick, he got worse, and then he died. And talking about that in such a way that he could be funny about it. And someone that every person I think that will, you know, is listening to this, all eight of you, every person has trauma. Mm-hmm. And it's funny, I was just saying earlier today to somebody that trauma inherently makes you funny, mm-hmm. a little bit, because you kind of learn to cope with your trauma with humor. And I feel like this version of what Rob Delaney is doing is sort of the ultimate version of that, because he found a way to find humor in something that is not funny at all.
Yeah, there's nothing funny about childhood cancer, especially childhood brain cancer,
yeah.
which is what this was. And like, and there are so many small details of their lives that I love and that like just devastated me. And it was, whenever late in the story, another scene that like really hit me was, so they had a lot of nurses and stuff and healthcare professionals that like rotated in and out of their house when Henry came home finally from the hospital. The child spent a great portion of his life, because he was two whenever he was dying, in the hospitals. But he did get to come home for a little while. And there's this time where they had done all kinds of different surgeries, and every time they did this surgery, it degraded his brain's ability to cope with general anesthetic. And like, there came a point where he couldn't take any more anesthetic, because he would just shut down and that would be it. So at a certain point, they just accepted that this is the end. We're not gonna do any more treatment. We're just gonna be hospice here on out. And they had this huge falling out with one nurse,
yeah,
and like who just could not accept their decision that he could not survive another surgery. He would not make it through, and they were not going to put him through that. They were going to let him live out the rest of the time that he had,
as long as it was,
because just putting him through that was just going to take away the few days that he had left. That like, where he still, he could be awake, and he could be with his brothers, and he could be with his parents, and he could go to the park, and he could do all these other things. But if they did that last surgery, he would have just died. It was basically 100%.
Yeah, I remember, because they talk about how like, okay, he had like 3 months left to live. If we did a surgery, it would be, he might live another...
He might live a little bit longer.
But it wouldn't be good.
He would be basically brain dead.
Which, and like that... I could not imagine
being in that situation.
That decision. And, you know, Rob Delaney has such a, you know, one of the things I like about it was he's such a terrific writer, and he's such a good writer in sort of making you as a reader or a listener, if you listen to Audible, feel like you're living through it. There were times where I legitimately felt like I was living through my son dying young.
Yeah, no, I mean...
And that is... The amount of skill to make you believe, like, feel that, and go, because all humans, for the most part, have empathy.
Yeah.
You know, so you're going to understand what sort of, I suffer with you, I get what you're... This book actually made me feel like I was in that position.
Yeah, there were a lot of times where, like, I didn't just think about what the hospital room was. I felt like I was in that room. And like, especially whenever he was talking about how the music he listened to, and I've actually downloaded a few of those songs, because I'm sad, morbid.
Oh, it's the Cure, right?
Elliot Smith, Needle in the Hay, is what he was talking about. That something about that song, like, really makes me think about this book.
Well, yeah, because it's such a poignant, like, moment in this book where he talks about this, you know, this beautifully sad song that he would listen to because he was sad and he wanted to be sad. I think often we as people want to steer away from sad because sad's bad. It's not good. You don't want to be in, you know, like, why would you want to be sad? But there's something to be said about just letting yourself feel how you feel. As someone that is in therapy regularly, you have to let yourself feel what you're feeling. And often we are so just deeply afraid of letting ourselves go to these bad places because that, like, in a way, you're sort of taught, especially as men, you have to push that down.
Yeah.
You know, you can't let yourself go there because that's, for whatever reason, man up or toughen up or whatever. But I think there's a certain beauty in letting yourself feel how you feel and letting yourself be there in that moment, because there's a certain, in this book is a positive, there's a certain beauty in the sadness. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not good, it's not beautiful that this happened, it's not beautiful that this man who seems like a very all-around decent person, regardless, good person, bad person, no one deserves to have their child die in front of them.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's a certain beauty in the misery.
Yeah, I mean, it's a study in contradiction where why do we like such sad things? And I feel like most people, they don't want to admit it like I do. Most people like a good sad story.
Oh, yeah.
It's because there's a catharsis to it. Yeah, there's something wonderfully majestic about tragedy that, like, nothing feels more authentic than the truly great tragedies. And I love comedy a whole lot. But, like, I don't remember a purely comedic story that ever struck me as profound as most tragedies.
So I think that, like, overall, mostly tragedy, true tragedy, we relate to because we as people all have moments like that. I think there are very, very few instances of comedy that sum up the human experience. Mm-hmm. You know, comedy, it was funny. I was referencing this morning. There are very few moments in comedy, like, where something absurd happens to you that feels like universally we all relate to this. Mm-hmm. That's what makes, like, stand-up comedians so effective, because they can find ways to sort of humanize these weird, quirky things that happen to people, making a way that we relate to. But everyone, there's a reason there's no stand-up tragedy. Like, yeah. Because tragedy is something that we all go through. Whether it's being, you know, abused as a child, or whether it's your parent passing away when you're relatively young, or whatever. Because every single person can relate to something tragic. And I don't care where, if you're from the United States or if you're from the poorest country in the Middle East, you can relate to tragedy.
Yeah, well, I think the ingredients for tragedy is just time plus experience. It's, yeah, like, eventually something tragic is going to happen in your life. I mean, maybe you're one of those people where you're lucky and it isn't until late in your life. Well, most of us, you have a lot of little tragedies throughout life. A lot of moments where things just end. And, like, it's kind of amazing in this story where, like, it captures his son was fine and eating blueberries. And was happy as could be. And that was their life. They had kids. This was their youngest of three. And it was a party, and he was feeding his son blueberries, and everybody was happy, and then his son threw up the blueberries, and that was the start of the end. And, like, in that moment, he probably didn't think, even cleaning up vomit, didn't think, well, this is the end of an era, or whatever, and it would never be that good again.
That is, it's funny, because he talks about that in the book. That's so true. Is think about all the little things you take for granted. Mm. You know, no one enjoys cleaning up, you know, vomit or whatever, poop or, you know, and even if you're not a parent, like, up to a human child, you know, there's going to be a day, like, I have a pug. I literally love my dog more than I love a lot of people. And there's going to come a day, and he's 10 years old, so it's not that far away, fortunately, where I'm going to clean up his dog poop for the last time. And I'm not going to know it, probably, at the time, that's the last time. And for, you know, for this, you know, it wasn't the last time I cleaned up his vomit, but in the most extreme version of that, he probably didn't hear it. He did not think when he was cleaning up his son's blueberry vomit that, ah, this is probably something, whatever. I'm just, you know, this kid threw up. It happens. Kids throw up.
Yeah, I mean.
But there's something so devastating about the idea of something so mundane as a parent that is actually soul-crushing.
Yeah, that was their last good day.
Their last normal day. Yeah, their last normal day.
I like, because every day after that became about Henry's illness. And it would always be Henry's illness until the end of Henry's life. And that was it. And, like, I think that life, in life in general, that happens a lot. Is that you have these moments where, like, you don't realize in the moment this is the last time you're seeing this or doing this or being here or being talking to this person. And isn't it, and sometimes you don't even realize it until years later. Oh, I guess I never went back there and I never will.
It's funny you say that because I saw this thing online relatively recently, and in a way it made me very sad, cause, but for no reason it made me sad. It made me sad where you one day, you know, I grew up, you know, in a, like a street with a lot of friends. We all did, you know, and one day we all were doing the thing we would always do, play basketball or play baseball or something.
You went out to play.
One time, that was the last time that ever happened, and I never knew it. Mm-hmm. And I thought about that. I mean, it's funny. Now I'm 35 years old. I cannot remember the last time I did that. Like, I know I remember there are times that stick out to me.
Yeah.
But I can't go back and go, oh, that day was the last day me and my friends on my street that I grew up together, I grew up with, you know, from the age of, you know, 9 to high school, end of high school, you know, that was the last time I can't recall that. And that, in a weird way, made me very sad. You know, I still occasionally see these people, you know, and that's fine, but it's never the same.
I think that's the big profound thing in this story is that doesn't just happen with, like, events and people and eras of your life. That happens with people.
Yeah.
People that you love that are just, this was the last day you ever saw them healthy. This is the last day you ever saw them in life. And, like, it's a much more extreme version of that. But, like, everybody can relate to that kind of... People have had lasts.
Yeah.
And, like, and to think that, like... What's so devastating about this last is that you don't ever anticipate having a last moment with you. Having the last moment of your son's life, you expect that you're going to die before them.
You're expecting you're going to be our last moment for them, not this other way around.
Yeah.
It's funny because, you know, I've never had it because I've never had a child die. You know, so I've never had the devastation. But I think back to I've had grandparents die, I've had parents die, and I remember last moments with them. You know, and that's tragic. It's sad, but it's not tragic. You know, it's hard. It's one of those things where I'm not trying to impugn anyone that's had a grandparent or a parent die.
Yeah. I mean, my grandfather, my grandmother, and my other grandfather, three of my grandparents are dead.
Yeah, and that's sad, you know, but it's also the proper way it's supposed to be.
Yeah.
You know, if you had to, you know, pick, you know, okay, what's sadder? Like, you know, like, a 90-year-old dying or a 9-year-old dying. You're going to pick the 90-year-old. That's, oh, it's like the 9-year-old. They can die. Like, that's fine. They live to 90. It's good. You know, and I'm, you know, for this book, like, it just makes you realize that, like, there's so much, the life is so fragile and nothing ever is going to prepare you for the fact that one day, if you have a child or friends or anyone, mm-hmm. it could be the last time you ever see them. And I think there's something so, it makes you sort of appreciate life a lot because of how it ends. You know, if everything went on forever, it wouldn't matter. To quote Jason Isbell, it's knowing this can't go on forever, likely one of us have spent some time alone. You know, that's the thing about life is that, you know, I love my wife. I would die for my wife and she would die for me. More than likely, one of us is going to end heartbroken. Mm-hmm. And that is, you don't think about that in the context of having a child, where you think, okay, I have this kid. When the moment they're born, you think, okay, here's what's going to happen. I'll be around this kid until he's probably 40. Mm-hmm. And then I die. And that's it. Because that's what life's supposed to be. In an ideal world, you see your kid till they're in their, you know, 40s or 50s maybe. And then you die. And that's good. You're not trained for what if that kid dies at 2.
Yeah, I mean, it seems so unnatural. I mean, but clearly it wasn't in the past. People had, the mortality rate in children was so huge. But like in the modern era, where we can cure so many things, it just feels so unexpected. And like, and it's hard to accept that this is just what it is that children can die of brain cancer and there's just nothing to be done about it.
Yeah, I think that's like, it's funny. I feel like a lot of times on this podcast, we get really funny, and this is definitely going to be a very depressing episode. And sorry, everyone out there. This is depressing, but this is a depressing book. I picked it. My fault.
I also don't feel like this is one where there's any real sections. It's just like this book. It's just a mush of...
Yeah, this is one of those things where I know we're bouncing around a lot, and I think that's just the nature of this book. I don't think there's a way to like do it. And you can't do this book justice by saying, okay, this is this, this is this, this is this. Because I don't think that's fair. I think this book, you know, to get back sort of on somewhat topic, like one of my main sort of dislikes of it, you know, overall, is that this book takes place in England. He's an American citizen, I believe, but he starred in a show in England. So he got a work visa, and because they're a proper world, they're a proper country. Because of that, his family could go there, and they had the same access to healthcare as citizens have. So he was able to not have to pay anything, really, to cover his child's illness. But he spends a lot of time talking about if this happened in America, it would have cost me so much more. And I agree. I'm not trying to deny that that's definitely reality. As someone that has health problems, I know how shitty the American healthcare system is. Mm. And I know you do too. But it doesn't really mean anything in this book. It's like that. It's like, not to be political, it's like how I'm not going to say who, a certain segment of the political spectrum that will go, well, what if this happened to, what if it was a small child this happened to?
Yeah.
that would be very sad, but it didn't happen. That's not what reality here.
Yeah, like I equally agree that the healthcare system in the United States is rather poor and shameful for a developed, the richest country in the world.
Richest country ever.
Sure. And yet people fear to go to the doctor because they don't want to go bankrupt. They'd rather choose death. And I agree with that entirely. But I don't think that particular sub-narrative really added anything to the story, other than the devastating story of this man and his wife and his other children facing the fact that the youngest of the family was dying a slow and horrible death. And like, coming out for, we should really do better insurance better in America. That is a thing that we should talk about. I don't think this was where.
No, that's sort of, honestly, to be honest with you, and I don't want to, like I said, I'm not trying to insult Rob Delaney, but it took me out, it kind of took me out of the story the times he really hammered him out bad. Oh, thank God it happened in England, because if it happened in America, that would be that. What also kind of rings a little hollow to me is that he's a very, very successful comedy writer, actor, producer. So, and that doesn't shake away from his heartbreak by any means. It does not. It absolutely doesn't. I'm not trying to say that like, oh, he doesn't have the right to be sad that his son died. But he was always going to be able to afford his child's health care.
Yeah, well, I don't know what his exact income was like if he didn't take that show, because I think that's where most of his income came from. And then they were on hold, so I think that money was a little tight for them.
I don't know. It's hard for me. I just feel like that's maybe, but he was definitely more well off than the average.
Yeah, than the average bear. Like you're not in a show that gets renewed for several seasons.
Four or five seasons.
Yeah. And you're not making at least a decent paycheck.
You know, and I'm not trying to say that like that makes it like any better, because it doesn't. I don't care. You could be Elon Musk, you know, and your son, could would die young, and it'd still be heartbreaking. It wouldn't make it doesn't matter that you could afford the healthcare. If they can't do anything, they can't do anything.
Well, I think that part of their struggles, monetarily speaking, is that they probably weren't his wife probably wasn't working, and there were long hiatuses for him.
Yeah.
And just because the British healthcare system paid for it, like the healthcare portion of it, going to see the doctor, the medicines, certain therapies, I bet it didn't pay for every single ancillary service. Hospital bed for the house, accessible.
The bathtub they bought, so they could bathe him,
accessible bathrooms. What I was just gonna say, various accoutrements you can need. So combination of devastating grief, long hiatuses from work. I bet it was pretty rough still.
Yeah, and again, I'm not trying to say that regardless of his level of income or what, it doesn't make it any better. I just that's to me that's always gonna be tough, and it's also one of those things where this is nitpicky for nitpicking's sake, but because nothing, I don't care. This dude, again, he could be a freaking trillionaire, and it wouldn't make this book any different to me. It would not make a difference to me, because it's just sad. Mm-hmm. And it's truly just sad in the deepest, I think. But this book is funny. We've covered a lot of sad things on this podcast. This book makes Red Rising feel like a walk. A feel-good story where you're walking through a park. Because that's a fiction. There's no fictional book that will ever compare to how truly devastatingly sad this book is.
Yeah, because there's, as much as I can put myself into a fictional story, sometimes it can feel more real to me than reality in those moments of flow. Not overall, I'm not that kind of person, but whenever you're so engaged in something where you're watching a show and the borders of the TV go away, you know that experience I'm talking about?
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
When you think back of whenever you're watching a movie that you're really compelled to, that you don't remember the things around, even that doesn't compare to the bone-deep knowledge that this actually happened to a real little boy and a real family. The saddest thing that ever happened to a fictional character still doesn't compare.
It's funny, because one of the last things I want to talk about before we probably wrap this up is, after I read this book, probably about 2 or 3 weeks later, I was flipping through the TV, and Deadpool 2 came on. And I love Deadpool 2.
Yeah.
And I'm watching it, and then I'm just watching the movie, laughing. And then I see, during that scene, the montage where he's trying to find his X-Men, quote unquote, and Rob Delaney's in it. I'm like, oh, Rob Delaney, okay. And then I'm watching this happen, and then I realize this movie came out, I'm doing the math in my head, I'm like, oh, God, this came out right when this was happening. And in the book, he references taking a paycheck job. I don't think he specifically said it was Deadpool 2.
Yeah, and nobody really ever talks about how that is absolutely what his character Peter in Deadpool 2 is, is that he needed a paycheck.
And he's friends with Ryan Reynolds. He's very good friends with Ryan Reynolds.
Yeah,
And he Ryan Reynolds, because he's a freaking actually decent human being, wrote a character specifically so that his friend, who's going through the worst thing imaginable, could have a very expensive paycheck.
Yeah, it really changes that movie for me. And none of the actors said that's what this was. Nobody. I want to be completely clear about my personal theory on this. It is just that. It's my personal theory. That nobody ever said this is what happened or why it happened. But if you do the timeline of when this book is depicting and when that movie would have been
filmed,
it was right whenever it would have been at the hardest.
It would have been right. It would have been a solid. I think his son died at 2. He got sick at 9 or 10, 9 months.
Yeah.
This would have been right when the kid was 14, 15 months old. Right in the height of going through it. And so it's funny. I remember watching that with my wife, and I was just I can't watch this movie the same way ever again. And I love Deadpool 2. I thought Deadpool 2 was incredible. It was generally incredible. Very funny, like really, really well done. But now seeing Rob Delaney in that, I'm not trying to make it like Rob Delaney ruined Deadpool 2 to me. But it's hard now to separate this beautifully sad book from that movie. Because I know what's going on in this dude's head, in his life at the time. Not his head, what's going on in his life. And it just, watching it, I'm just like, oh. And also, good on Ryan Reynolds. Because the character of Peter, who he plays literally a guy that is, I have no superpowers, I'm just, he's literally just Rob Delaney.
Like, in this situation.
In this situation. And you know that Ryan Reynolds probably said, you know, like, I got you, I'm going to write you a role that you don't have to do too much on.
Yeah.
You don't think too deep about it. You don't have to get makeup or anything intense. You just show up, get a little, your light movie makeup, do your scenes, and get out. And you'll be paid. Not only just paid, but think about this. If you're an actor in these movies, anytime they air, you get money. You know, and stuff. Yeah, so you know that Ryan Reynolds absolutely, I'm sure, thought that, hey, this is going to be a movie that plays in syndication a lot because it's a big box comic book movie. I watched it on FX. I feel like any, right now, listen to this. Go turn on FX right now. I'll bet you Deadpool 2 might be on. Like,
Deadpool 2 definitely might be on.
Like, there's a chance.
Quite a sentence.
There's a chance. It's like, if you put
definitely
on right.
Definitely might be.
It, this moment, go. It might. There's like a solid 60% chance that Deadpool 2 is on.
I'd love to know how you came to that percentage.
I don't know, because 83% of sticks are made up on the spot, and and that was right there. But that's what I feel like, because that's, you know, that's the thing that happens in these movies, that, like, you know, you're, you know, that actor, if you watch any comic book movie, you watch it. Oh, that random actor that shows up, you know, they're getting royalties.
Yeah.
And so Deadpool,
especially because he's a named character.
He's a named character, and he shows up, you know, he's in multiple scenes.
Yeah.
And he's not in a long, he's probably only 15 minutes total. He's a named character.
With lines.
With lines that gets, you know, has a cool death.
Yeah.
And so you know that he got royalties. And like, so someone that's like watching this, you're like, that dude is like, that's, it makes me sad to know that why that probably happened. And it just, It takes us an actually funny scene, like the scenes he's in, and makes them just like sad, but in a good way, because
they're still funny.
Very funny. Yeah,
I've watched it since then. But, like, I think that's probably the best thing to, like, to sort of end on.
Yeah, because
it's the only high moment on this. I don't think that we could improve upon.
No,
the fact that, like, it's kind of heartwarming to see him in Deadpool.
You feel good, because you're like, you know, you want this dude to, because as you read the book, you root for him, because he's the protagonist of the story. Mm-hmm. And you, if you go into that story blind, the problem is there's no blind, because he literally says in the first 5 minutes, my son dies. So you know right away this story doesn't end well.
Yeah.
And but you root for him because you like him. And to be honest, Rob Delaney, I don't know if you've seen anything of his like work other than the book. He's so charming. He's so funny. He's so talented. He's so likable. I've liked Rob Delaney for years. I've followed Rob Delaney on some form of social media probably since 2008. Mm-hmm. I've always liked him. I've been a fan. I've been an admirer from a long time. And to see him go through this, like, makes me feel like it's that parasocial relationship. Mm-hmm. He doesn't know I exist.
Yeah.
But I feel so bad that he went through this. And I really, like, it breaks my heart that this dude who was provided me so much humor and goodwill over the years went through this devastatingly heartbreaking thing. And I know they've had, it's funny because I know, thanks to CBS This Morning, shout out Gail, that him and his wife had a child after this, and their family feels whole, and they're going through a lot, but it feels whole in a not complete way, because nothing will ever replace Henry.
Yeah. All right. So I think that's where we're gonna
wrap
up on that.
So what's your pick for for next month?
I think we're gonna go with one of my favorite fiction stories. Not too devastating.
Let's get feel good after this.
It isn't, but it's not feel bad. It's more just scary.
Yeah, I like
so
that.
So we're gonna go with At the Mountains of Madness by H.P. Lovecraft. But we're going to do a double feature, because there is just the regular story that H.P. Lovecraft wrote, but there is a radio drama version of this that I like a lot, and we're going to talk about that more in the next episode.
Well, I like that. That sounds fun to me. Probably a little bit more uplifting than this pick.
I don't think it's uplifting, but
like, bad comparatively.
But yeah, I mean, nobody's children die. So,
well, that's nice. That's like, good.
People die, but
they
were adults.
They're adults. They're fuck them. They're fine. To me, if you die over the age of 50, it's not heartbreaking anymore.
There were a couple dead dogs. So.
Oh, that's devastating. I don't want that.
There is that too. Yeah. So that is devastating.
Well, I'm looking forward to it, and I'm sure that's going to be comparatively a happier story than this one. So I guess we'll just wrap it up here, and I want to, Kev did the intro, I guess I'll do the outro. Thank you all so much for listening, and we'll see you next month.